Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. We're here with Nick, who's been in the Leverage program for quite some time and who's utilized a lot of the tactics we talk about, specifically in terms of investing in real estate, like creating a side hustle on Airbnb. So I wanted to come up with something special for the 200th episode of the podcast. And I was thinking, what can I really do for guys listening to give them a lot of value? And it occurred to me that I always talk about Airbnb, but I've never really gone into like how to do it, how I got into it, and given people some like solid tools to actually pursue it if they want to. And by Airbnb, I don't mean specifically Airbnb. I mean short-term rental arbitrage. So you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, for sure. So, so when I was, growing up, I always saw Robbie have this crazy lifestyle, and I was pretty impressed how you could just kind of do whatever you wanted to do on a daily basis.
And yeah, Nick's the best friend of my little brother. So I'm what, like 14 years older than you?
Yeah, 26. So it was always crazy seeing like Robbie with a ton of hot girls, no 9-to-5 job, and just living this insane lifestyle. So he was always someone that like we always looked up to. So then once I graduated college, you know, I was in my job. Then you see this fucker, you know, rolling around on Instagram, doing whatever he wants on a day-to-day basis. I really wanted to get into Airbnb. So I reached out to Robbie and was able to go through his program. And I think, because I saw a lot of people on Instagram also kind of doing Airbnb, but this was different since I knew Robbie was a good guy and I trusted him and I trusted that I would get value out of his course. And he would really walk me through kind of A through Z what to do. So once I got into his course and watched the videos, I really felt like I had, what I needed. I felt like I had all the tools that I needed to start my own Airbnb business and kind of get a good start to live a little bit more like Robbie.
So, yeah, I mean, because it's like you graduate college and you're like, what do I do? Do I get a corporate job? Do I do this? Do I do that? I was always drawn to, because my first job out of college was working at an investment bank. And that was like the most painful time of my life. Like I look back on the time I was the most unhappy, and it was working for that private equity firm from the age of like, 23 to almost 26, right before I started dating coaching. And while I was working for that company, I was just like approaching, meeting women, doing everything to build that skill set that I could. I was taking every weekend, flying to boot camps and seminars, doing all the chasing girls, of course, and going through the motions. And I started a blog. And the way I kind of became a dating coach was both I got clients from the blog, guys who were just like following my blog and like, hey, will you coach me? And I was working for another coaching company. And luckily, kind of right when the housing market crashed in 2008, I was laid off from that job. And I had an option. Do I go back into investment banking that I hate? Or do I try to make it as an entrepreneur, as a dating coach? And it just kind of forced me to do that. And then I just made it work, which is a big sort of key to, that's always been to my success. And I see this with everyone. Like if you're forced to make something work, you'll make it work. Mm-hmm. But if you're just like trying it out, you don't really have your ass in the line and you don't really have any skin in the game, or you can fall back on something else, it's too easy to stay in your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was kind of in a right place, right time situation where that stock market crash of 07, 08 forced me to do it, but you can use the same principle. And then I guess I'll tell my story about how I started using Airbnb as a way to make semi-passive income, or as close to passive income as you can. So I was traveling during the summer of 2012, running some workshops in Eastern Europe. Chasing girls, doing all the stuff that we talk about in the Leverage program. And Airbnb was like just a new thing that you could go and you could rent someone's apartment. instead of staying in a hotel. So I used it a couple times in Europe, thought it was cool. And then we came back to New York City, and me and my business partner turned our, like, the place we were renting into an Airbnb. And we rented it out, you know, whenever we could. And quickly we found that, you know, we were making almost 2.5 to 3 times our rent. So it was so much money that we were making compared to what we were paying. It like didn't even make sense for us to live there anymore. Right.
That's
like
insane.
How do you turn down 3x your rent? And our place was stupid. It was a huge place. It was a 4-bedroom place in Union Square. The rent was $12,000 a month. And we were clearing sometimes $30,000 on the month, right? That's like drug dealer returns, right? And it's not like we're really doing anything. Airbnb is doing all the marketing for us. We're just, you know, we throw our place up, create a listing, and Airbnb markets it to everyone. They come, they stay, and we get the money. Now, obviously, it's not as easy now as it was then, but we took that same formula. And we'll talk about that in a second, but we took that same formula and we just replicated it. You know, we scaled it. We're like, all right, well, we have this place in Union Square. Let's get another place in Soho. So we found a 3-bedroom in Soho. And then we were always kind of living bi-coastally. You know, we'd spend typically summer in Europe, winter in LA, because it's nice. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be in New York in the winter. And, you know, spring and fall, usually in New York in a combination of LA. So, you know, we started this in New York, and then we're like, well, let's see if it works in LA. So we moved to West Hollywood, got a couple spots there. And then we went down to Miami and we got some places there too. And we found, like, across the board that if there was a market where there was hotels, you could make money on Airbnb. And the whole idea that we talked about, the rental arbitrage, is you're taking something that you're paying, you're getting a lease, right? Or you're buying a property. Rental arbitrage is different. We'll use a lease analogy. You're taking a lease. Let's say I lease a place for $3,000 a month for the year, right? And then I turn around and I rent it out nightly, right? Instead of paying, if I'm paying $3,000 a month, that's about $100 a night, right? But when I'm renting it out for a nightly rate, I'm obviously charging way more than that. And the money I'm making is the difference between that. So your typical hotel room in LA, you know, you go on booking.com or something, it's probably going to cost you around $250 to $300 a night, right? So how much can you get for a 1-bedroom place in LA? Well, about half that on Airbnb, right? Some place of like a comparable level. Like if your place is a bomb and it's an insanely nice 1-bedroom, you can compare it to the Ritz-Carlton. If it's kind of a, you know, not so nice, you compare it to a Motel 6 and you take 50% of that, right? So if you have a place that's middle of the road, like a Holiday Inn, and a Holiday Inn's $300 a night, you can expect $150 per bedroom. So if you have a 3-bedroom place, you can expect about, you know, $450 a night, right? And if the rent on that place for a 3-bedroom place, and say you find a place for $5,000 a month, right? That was 450 times 30. It's like 14,000, something like that, 12,000.
Yeah.
So that difference, 12,000 minus 5,000, is your profit, right? If you're booked out every night. So you don't really consider that you're going to get booked every night. Like 20 nights out of the month is pretty good. And then it's your time and the what it takes to run that operation. You're kind of becoming like a mini hotelier.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll show the stats on, you know, our first year doing that. I'll just pull up our Airbnb account here. This is a PowerPoint where we got one of the slides in there, and you can see in that first year, 2016 is the first year we operated, like, all year. Our payout was $304,000, you know, from January 1st to December 31st.
I think that's just insane too, because you were able to do that all in the first year. Like, I don't think I've ever come across another business opportunity where you can scale it so quickly.
Yeah, it's easy to scale because, well, there's a few things about scaling it, which we should probably get into. But do you think we need to talk any more about, like, how it works?
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty simple. Just rental arbitrage being, running a place out from the landlord and then putting it on Airbnb is pretty much the gist of it.
So the tough part for most people is, well, now we have to deal with city regulations. So can you do it in certain cities? And it's convincing a landlord to let you Airbnb their place in the first place, mm-hmm. right? So you recently got a place, so we could kind of use you as a case study.
Yeah.
So what was your process? What did you kind of feel like as, because you literally just went through it. So what were your kind of trepidations? And just before, I guess, we get into that, like, we should probably talk about who this is for and the reasons why to do this, why not. So if you want to, like, start a totally new business, this is certainly something you could do. Like, if you hate the idea of just getting, like, a job somewhere, you could become, an Airbnb host and you could rent some properties and re-rent them. Certainly something you can do. My recommendation is, if you already have a job and you want to either subsidize your rent, so start renting out your own place so you can travel, because that's what we kind of originally did, is, we just started renting out our place. We figured we'd just travel while people were there. And that's an awesome way to get paid to travel, basically. you get a month long book and you're like, cool, well, I'm going to take that money. I'm going to go to, for me, it was Ukraine for a while. And I'm going to spend three times less over there.
Yeah.
So people are always like, well, how do you travel so much? Well, I'm getting paid to travel. So that's obviously how you can do it. But in terms of a side hustle, I think there's no better side hustle out there, right? Like, you got your main job. Like, most of the guys that are in leverage are either programmers or entrepreneurs or, IT, some sort of job. And they have their normal job. And on the side, they create this passive income generating side hustle, right? Mm-hmm. It's not fully passive income, of course, but the goal is to systematize everything to get it to be close to passive income as they can. And eventually, if you have enough income coming in from this side hustle, you could quit your job, right? Mm-hmm. And I was in that position after that first year when, you saw the revenue. Like, I could have quit being a dating coach, but yeah. I love being a dating coach and I love talking about this and doing this podcast. So there's no reason for me to quit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I kind of did quit in 2018 when I started doing those Playboy trips. Like, I basically stopped coaching and I wasn't really bringing in a whole lot of coaching revenue because I was just partying and hanging out with girls on yachts. But then I, after too much partying, I was like, all right, I really enjoy coaching and I really enjoy, like, working with guys. So I kind of went back to it more. But once your income from, this side hustle exceeds your expenses, like, you can basically unplug from the matrix, as they say, and you don't have to work anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the beauty of real estate investing in general, is it offers, obviously, that long-term goal. And real estate is very safe, right? Like, the traditional way of investing in real estate, I mean, you could talk about this because you just kind of got into real estate, like, as your first job out of college, right?
Yeah, so I would even go to say that after seeing the returns on Airbnb and working in commercial real estate for the past 4 years, I'm definitely going to be investing in Airbnbs for the rest of my life, just because the returns are so much higher than investing in anything else. So I don't, and it's not, like you said, obviously, this is about as close to passive as it gets, with a little bit of extra work, of course, but the returns that you're going to get on buying an Airbnb over buying, like, any other type of real estate, in my opinion, is a way better decision. Obviously, if you pick the right market.
Like, what's a decent return? Like, let's say I buy a single family house with the intention of making it an investment property, right? I want to find a long-term tenant. Say I buy a 3-bedroom house in LA, right? And I want to find a family to live there. And I'm hoping that it cash flows. So my mortgage is less than what they're paying me every month, mm-hmm. minus the property taxes, minus whatever other costs I have. So the goal is to, if you can make 10% a year, that's awesome,
That's a great deal too. You're lucky to find that, honestly.
Hard to find.
Yeah.
Right. And to do that, to buy that house is probably going to cost in LA, right? In any decent area of LA is going to be $1 million,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm going to probably need a 20% down payment because mm-hmm. it's an investment property, right? If it was my first time home or it was some sort of other deal, maybe you can get 5 or 10% down. But I mean, we could even say, even if you only need 10% down, you're going to need $100,000,
mm-hmm.
right? $100,000, your mortgage is probably going to be, I don't know how much per month, $4,000 or $5,000, something like that. And then you find a tenant, you hope they pay 5,500, right? If your mortgage is five, you hope they pay 5,500. You put that $500 in your pocket, right? And of course you're building equity over time. If you sell the house 10 years later for 3 million, you know, you've done well. That's the reason why real estate, and most people who invest in real estate are basically, that's what they're doing. They're going for that long-term increase in value. But let's say instead of making 10% per month, you're making 200%, right?
100%,
or you're making 100%, you're making double. Like, that is the benefit of short-term rental. That's, you can easily do that. If you don't do that with Airbnb, you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So why don't we use your place that you just got in like Newport as a case study for that?
Yeah. So I signed, so I would also go as to say, if I didn't have Robbie to kind of show me the way, what kind of I struggled with was I was always afraid that I wasn't going to get bookings. So I was always afraid that I was going to sign a lease for kind of a lot of money. So my lease that I signed in Newport, pretty close to the beach, is for $4,700. And it's not like I have $4,700 to give every month. So I needed this to work. So without having you kind of reassure me that this was going to be profitable on Airbnb, I don't think I would have been able to pull the trigger. But after you kind of gave me the green light, then even in the summer months, we were getting bookings for like July 1 through 3. That was a $2,000 booking. So that was almost already right there, just in those 3 days, half my rent. And then we got to party there on the 4th of July. So like, aside from me being able to make money on this place, it's also been huge because I've been able to take dates there when it's not booked out. And it's a killer spot since it's like, you know, a short walk to the beach.
Right.
So,
you know, and you do it exactly how I recommend guys doing it, right? It's like, you want to multi-purpose your place. And that's what we had in New York. Like, the reason why me and my buddy had like a 12,000 a month place is because we were hosting poker games there. We were having parties there. Like, I don't need to live in a $12,000 a month place. But if you have a place, and you're a young single guy trying to leverage like his social life, that can be a huge asset, right?
That's
like
huge.
Having a spot on the Newport Peninsula where you can party, you can all season for Airbnb. If you want to, like, you know, host other things there, is such a huge asset to have. And if you can make money off of it,
it's game changer.
So you can take dates there when it's not booked, right? Let's say you have multiple. So what I, in LA, I had multiple places.
Yeah.
And it was great because I had like a girlfriend and we weren't monogamous. We were an open relationship, but I didn't want to like bring other girls and bang them like right in the other bedroom. So I'd just be like, well, you know, let me see what's open on the calendar. Okay, the spot on, you know, Hollywood Boulevard is open, and, you know, take a date, go to Rendon Canyon, bang her in the Hollywood place right after, and, you know, the main squeeze would never know. So from a like, you know, pimping perspective, it's pretty good too. So anyway, sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're good. That's exactly so I mean, even if, let's say, I were to just break even on this place, I still would have considered it a win because I would have been able to like kind of live more of this lifestyle that I'm looking to live, where I can have a place by the beach. And then hopefully, so I'm actually just about to hopefully secure two more places, and I'll know tomorrow.
Nice.
One will be down in Encinitas, and then one will be in like Northern Orange County. So then I'll really be able to kind of bounce from all those spots and go wherever I kind of, wherever's not booked. And then I'll be able to have my own little portfolio.
Nice. So from a, I'm guessing a lot of the guys who are watching are asking themselves the question, how easy is it to get, you know, a place from a landlord and convince him to let you Airbnb it? Because that's really step one. And unless you have the money to just buy a place. Mm-hmm. And even if you do have the money to buy a place, like I just said, that's 100K, right? And then you're going to have to furnish it. And you're going to have to, you know, then you're going to have to operate it, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say instead of buying a place, you deployed that 100K and you rented four or five places instead, mm-hmm. right? So let's say, because what do you need to start an Airbnb? You need first month's rent, security deposit. Some landlords require last month's rent, but you can usually negotiate on that. Some units come furnished, which is obviously ideal if you can do that. Mm-hmm. Some don't. So you need kind of like first month's rent, last month's rent, security deposit, furniture. Place is $5,000. You're going to need between $15,000 and $20,000 to start it up, right? Mm-hmm. Versus $100,000 to buy it,
yeah.
right? So you can get five places by doing the rental arbitrage model versus one place by buying a place. If you have that $100,000 that you've saved up for whatever. And are you going to make more money from the long-term appreciation of the one place, or are you going to make more from the 5x size of the business? Because now you have five units operating, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. If you can make your place is 4,700, if you can do double that in profit every month, if you can put 5,000 bucks in your pocket, right? And you do that five times, you got 25,000 a month. That's not bad, right?
Yeah, no, you're living large.
Whether or not the real estate appreciates, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, it doesn't matter if it appreciates because you're renting, right? Mm-hmm. You're not gaining anything from that. But, you know, versus the one place you buy. So it's, you know, it doesn't matter what happens to the real estate market, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, you're gonna make money. And everyone always, even in times of like, you know, recession, people always need places to stay,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, room housing is a commodity. It's not like it's a luxury good. Everyone needs housing. So that's your example.
And so what I would say to you, if like you thought, why would a landlord allow someone to do this, is my first deal was a completely perfect example of why I believe like I'm a better route to go for a landlord. Like with every fiber of myself, like I just completely believe I'm a better option, because when you walk into my apartment, it's completely spotless. We pay rent on time every month. We take care of all the minor maintenance issues, so they're never getting a phone call. Whereas when you walk into my friend's places who are in that same complex, the place is a complete disaster. It reeks of pot because they're smoking all the time. They have a dog, so there's shit everywhere. And there's just a like huge clutter of mess. So in my eyes, it's a no-brainer for a landlord to rent to a business rather than tenants, where you're going to run into a bunch of problems. Because they're always calling the landlord when something gets broken or
mm-hmm.
something doesn't work. Whereas me, I need it fixed right away. So I'm just going to go ahead and take care of it.
Right. Yeah. So the problem is a lot of landlords will hear Airbnb. They'll hear short-term rentals. And they'll just be like, hell no, I'm not doing that. I could do it myself. Why would I do it? Why would I let you do that? Well, that's the first kind of logical question. Why don't landlords do this themselves? Why don't they use Airbnb? Well, some of them do, but most of them are not looking to actually do the work that's required to run a short-term rental, right? These are typically just people who are looking to invest their money, have a property manager handle it, and make their 10% per year, right? 10% per year, even 5%, you're beating inflation. It's a good return. And if you have a lot of money, if you're retired, you know, then that's a very safe investment. Like real estate is usually deemed one of the safest investments because you have this tangible thing, right? You know, it's not like a stock where you can just, right? And so it's a hassle and a headache, and people, for the most part, most landlords don't want to do it. So that's the reason why, like, most landlords don't. And then how do you kind of convince them to do it? Or can you just do it behind their back and not tell them? Well, I used to do that. At one point, I was on 40 leases from LA, Miami, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, places in Mexico.
Was that ever stressful to be like on 40 leases?
It was, because like if you're on a lease, you'd be like, well, I could get evicted. I'm on the hook for all this money, blah, blah, blah. But we were running like so many units, and making money every month on virtually all of them. Mm-hmm. I never had any stress and I never got evicted. Even though about half the time I didn't even tell the landlords I was doing it. So let's talk about that, because everyone's scared of an eviction. Oh my God, right? So first of all, the eviction process is always hugely in favor of the tenant, right? Real estate laws are very strict against landlords, because landlords could just bully people, right? So first, before a landlord can evict you, they have to serve you with a 3-day notice to perform or quit. And then, you know, they tag that on they post that on your front door. And then if you don't basically like stop Airbnb-ing, or I'm going to evict you, then they would have to take you to court and actually get you to stop. But no landlord is going to go through that process because it's expensive, it's time consuming. The only way you'd ever get evicted is if you just didn't listen to them and you kept Airbnb-ing anyways, right? But when you get that 3-day notice to perform or quit, you just say, okay, cool, I'll stop. And then you stop doing it, right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm not encouraging people to go get places and then having to stop Airbnb-ing, because now you have no business. So that's stupid. It's much better to partner with your landlord, get him on the same page, operate this business, you know, above board, then kind of do what I did and just do it. Even though if you do just do it, you'll probably be okay. Right? It's like, you can do that. It depends on your personality. I'm the type of guy, roll the dice, whatever. But other people are much more risk averse.
You see, I'm the opposite. I would not do that. That would cause me a lot of stress. But, you know, you'd be surprised too how many landlords are going to allow you to do that. In my experience, I have a pretty high success rate with calling people and asking them. I think I'm now about 50%, but that's given, like, Robbie kind of gave me his techniques to pitching people.
Yeah.
And I would even say, like, management companies, because if you pitch them correctly too, like Robbie showed me, you know, you're basically taking over their job, so they're not going to get any calls either. So they're really in favor of you as well. And then a lot of the times they're going to have other units that they manage. So hopefully the one I get that I'll know in the next couple of days here, she actually might have another one for me as well. So it's a good way to kind of branch out and get multiple properties at once as well.
Nice. Yeah. The main thing, and like I always say, is pitching landlords is kind of like approaching girls, right? Yep. If you're not willing to do it, you're probably not going to have a business, right? It's really hard for you to just be sitting on your ass and have someone be like, hey, you want to Airbnb my place for me? Now, once you get your first place or a few places and people understand that this is your business and you're doing it, you'll get a lot of those requests, mm-hmm. right? But getting the first place is always the toughest, right?
Yeah.
And I had been like showing my clients for years and years and years how to do this. In 2018, I said, I'm sick of showing everyone individually. I'm just going to make a course on it. And when I was making that course, I went through the process again of creating another Airbnb business in a new market. And I did that in Kiev, Ukraine. And that business, I had like 16 units, and that was kicking ass up until when the war started. Now, unfortunately, you know, close to zero, because no one's coming. You can't even fly to Ukraine now. But prior to that, just as just kind of like a case study, I was like, all right, let's try Kiev, Ukraine. The nice thing about Kiev was there was really not a lot of barriers to entry in terms of like city rules or permission or anything like that. You just had to find a place, get the landlord's permission to rent it out or not, and operate it. So, you know, I found a real estate agent and I had him take me from place to place, and I gave my pitch. Now there's two landlord pitches. I'll give you guys one. The other one is a little bit more in depth. I think that one's a better one. I'll give the like traveling traveling guy one, right? The other one is in the course and it's more in depth, but it's also more, I think it's probably a higher success rate than this one. And that pitch was, you know, I'd go, I'd look for a place and I would just kind of, I'd tell the truth really. Be like, hey, listen, I'd walk around, I'd build some rapport with the landlord. I'd find out like, you know, why he bought it. Did he ever live here? What are the neighbors like? And that would usually lead to other conversations. You know, you'd be like, oh yeah, I moved in. I had a dog. Oh, really cool. Like I love dogs. Tell me about your dog. So you're building rapport as you're walking around and you're looking at the place. And obviously people want to do business with people they like and they trust. Mm-hmm. So if you don't do that, you're going to have a much tougher time when you eventually do the Airbnb pitch. So by the end of the walkthrough, which is usually like 15 to 20 minutes, we already had a pretty cool rapport and, you know, I could kind of feel out whether or not I was comfortable giving the pitch, right? Some people who are more just like, you know, I felt like I didn't really mesh with their personality. Sometimes I like chickened out and didn't give the pitch or gave it later on the phone. But usually I could kind of tell like, all right, this guy likes me. He seems cool. I'm just going to give the pitch and see what happens. So I'd be like, listen, I love the place. I want to rent it. My only issue is I don't know how often I'm going to be here. My plan is to be here at least 75% of the time, but I travel for work and I don't always know when I'm going to be forced to go on an assignment. And I don't want the place to just sit empty and for me to be paying every month when I'm not using it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So what I'm asking is the ability to essentially like rent it out when I'm gone. And obviously, first, I'm going to look for friends and family, you know, other people that I trust, because I want obviously someone in here I trust. It's my furniture. It's my security deposit. I'm not going to rent this out to some like homeless people who are going to like, you know, make me lose a lot of money, of course. You know, but if I can't even find like that, I might use a vacation rental site. Is that something you're open to doing? Mm-hmm. And you're going to get one of three answers. You're going to get no, never going to do that. Like, I don't want my place used on Airbnb. And you're like, okay, cool. You know, not the right fit for me. No big deal. Right. Or you're going to get a, yeah, I don't care what you do with it. Like, as long as you pay rent on time, right, that's what you want. Or you'll get something in the middle. Like, oh, I don't know. It seems blah, blah, blah. If you get anything but a hell no, you can easily turn that into a yes. You can turn it into a yes on the spot by being like, listen, if you're worried about it, let me give you an extra $1,000 a month for the security deposit. Or sorry, let me give you an extra $1,000 for the security deposit. Let me double the security deposit, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're asking $2,500 a month for the place. If you let me do that and we can make a deal today, I'll give you $2,700 a month, mm-hmm. right? Because I know even if I pay an extra couple hundred bucks in rent, it's not going to make a big difference on my bottom line if I'm hoping to like 2X or 2.5, 3X the rent, mm-hmm. right? So you'd be shocked. Like I've given that pitch, I don't know, probably 50 times. And I've gotten a yes, probably close to half, mm-hmm. you know, since I started doing this in like 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
And that's not even the best pitch, but you see how it's just, you know, you're not lying. You're not saying anything that's not true. And then of course, instead of renting out to your friends and family, just put it on Airbnb. They've already, like, they don't care, right? As long as you're paying rent on time. And obviously you're getting the place professionally cleaned after each cleaning or after each booking and check in and check out. So that's the landlord pitch. That's like one version of it. And yeah, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that's pretty much, you know, I used a little bit different of a pitch since I, but pretty much like the same vibe.
General vibe. Yeah. And I say this is like approaching girls because if you day game, for example, which is something I'm always chatting about on this podcast, and you approach 10 girls, you know, seven of them are, you know, kind of cold, three are warm. You get a number from one or two and you get one date. That's not bad. One out of 10 ain't bad.
And the thing is, like, you really only need one property, just like you just need one girl. So.
Exactly. Now you'll have a much more profitable business with multiple. And once you get one, it's way easier to get more. But that first one is the hardest to get.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that extra couple thousand bucks is huge, especially if you're I guess, especially with like inflation and everything going on, I feel like gas is expensive over here, like in Orange County. So having that couple extra $1,000 a month, like really goes a long way.
Yeah. And I mean, if you have the courage to walk up to girls and kind of pitch yourself, you think it's that much harder to pitch a landlord on something he's already looking for? He's looking for a tenant, right? And you're just a slightly different tenant.
Yeah.
So it's one of the easiest pitches in the world. The only thing that's stopping people from doing this is fear and like not knowing how to run the business. And that's kind of what I want to transition and talk about a little bit now is, so the idea is not to create, like, so what happened with me was I quickly ramped up and we had like five of these properties and I was managing them with the help of my partner. And then we grew more. And all of a sudden I was managing like, you know, 10, 15 places. And that became
too much.
It was a huge headache. I was getting like, anytime there's any problem at any property, the guests are going to let you know, right? The toilet's clogged. I can't find the Wi-Fi password. I left my phone charger. Can you like ship it to me in Denmark? I lost my AirPods. There's a dog barking next door and they're annoying us. These people are playing music. It's 2 a.m. Or the neighbor's calling me saying your tenants are playing music. We're calling the cops. Like, there's just endless fucking problems with with actually doing this stuff. And for a few properties, in my opinion, up to three, it's doable as a side hustle, mm-hmm. right? You can have your main job, you can have your social life, and you can have this as a side hustle. But once you scale more than three properties, you're just not going to have time and you're going to hate your life.
Yeah.
Because property management is the most thankless job in the world. Like, it sucks. If you look at most property managers, they're like miserable people in their like late 40s to early 60s, and they hate their life.
They're not.
You're never getting a good call, right? No one's ever calling me like, I love your Airbnb. I just wanted to call and say, thank you so much. You're a great guy. Can I take you to dinner? You're not getting that call, right? Ever. So you're only getting shit, bad stuff. And it wears you down. It's annoying. What if you're out on a date and you get this annoying sort of thing? So the next step in the process is essentially firing yourself from the business, creating a systemization process and removing yourself from that equation. And you do that by finding the right cleaners, the right handymen, or the right city manager, like a boots on the ground person who's going to oversee the entire operation. And you can then decide what you want to do in the business. Like, what I like to do, because I've got all my places in Kiev and before the war, what I would do is I had a city manager. Mm-hmm. She handled all of the check-ins and cleanings, scheduling the cleaners, dealing with handymen, and any sort of guest relations stuff that happened after the booking was complete. All I did was I set prices and managed the calendar, you know, to whether to accept bookings or not. And I messaged with guests in order to do that.
Gotcha.
And that's what I enjoyed. I don't love setting prices. That requires a little bit of work. You got to go on there every week. You got to look at comparables in the area. You got to see if there's any big events coming up and set your prices to a competitive rate. Or there's ways you can you can let other companies do that for you.
Yeah, I would almost say now using something like Price Labs, which is just $20 a month, and it's pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, nice, Price Labs. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think they were doing it in Kiev. So I didn't have that option. But yeah, there's companies that'll do that for you. But when you're first learning, I think you should learn to do pricing before you. You know, you hand that off to someone else. There's also companies that do the messaging. So you're like totally hands off. But like I said, I think you should learn the business first before outsourcing those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hiring those right people and systematizing it allows you to then step away. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we teach in the course. I think that's the most valuable is like, cause you have like a question for me all the time. Like, mm-hmm. what about this? So there's all these like, different questions that come up, right? And that's mainly what people are asking me. So that's kind of how I design the course. So you can just learn these modules, understand what to do, and then you have a community of people who have the answer. So you can go through and, you know, just deal with that stuff as it comes up.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of like just situational stuff that having you with 40 leases that you've already done, I feel like you've probably seen it all. So having your advice on everything just, I feel like has saved me a lot of money and time. So
yeah, because it's everything from locating a property to then, you know, first you got to locate it, and then you have to, you got to go give the pitch. And then if you get it, you got to deal with the lease and making sure you've got the right rider or the addendum to make sure that's all kosher so you don't get into trouble later, right? And then you got to make the listing, and then you have to make sure you got the cleaners and the handyman right. Then you have to optimize the listing, get people in there, get good reviews, and try to turn a profit, and then rinse and repeat, scale.
Yeah.
Like that's essentially the whole business, right? Did I forget anything?
No, I think that's everything.
It's not hard. This does not take rocket science.
Yeah. So I think you just mentioned every part of the business. And I would say like a lot of this you can obviously find online. I would say like 75%, you could probably just watch YouTube videos, but like really having the one-on-one mentorship is where you get that last 25% that I felt like I needed.
Someone to hold your hand through the process, right?
Yeah. In order for me to be successful, for sure. And I think a lot of these other people that are pushing like courses, you know, what you need is the one-on-one mentorship, or at least like some sort of like access to you who's like been really seasoned in this business, rather than just like watching a set of videos.
Right.
So that's why, like, and obviously I've known you for a long time. So this is you really like.
It gave you the confidence to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it doesn't take a lot of brains to do this. Like people running Airbnbs, you know, doesn't take a Harvard degree, right? It's not difficult, but if you sign the wrong lease and you're paying too much money for the rent, you know, that's going to really hurt your profits. Or if you're not very good at like setting up these relationships with cleaners and making sure all that stuff is like very kosher when you do it, you're going to run into problems later. But the biggest thing, the reason why, and the reason why this works, because it's like, well, if this is so easy, how can you make money, right? Because most Airbnb hosts just suck, right? They're just not good. They are just lazy. They don't deal with prices, or they don't outsource it to people that are qualified to deal with it. They don't respond to bookings on time, so they lose bookings that way. Just responding to bookings on time, you're going to crush because the other hosts are not. Like I was shocked when I went into the Kiev market. I was like, wow, there's a lot of competition here. You know, it's like very easy to get an Airbnb. Other people like Ukrainians are pretty like business savvy and entrepreneurial. There's like tons of these people that were doing it, but they all sucked. Like no one would answer a booking like request. Like they were slow. Half of them like, you know, either like they spoke English, but they didn't even bother to like translate it correctly. When you're dealing with mostly English speaking tourists, it was just so like, if you use Airbnb, like before you do it, you could just use Airbnb as a guest, mm-hmm. and you'll see like how bad some of these hosts are, mm-hmm. right? Or you'll see these super hosts with like tons and tons of properties as well. That's obviously being run and outsourced by a bigger company. And whenever that's happening too, there's an opportunity to outcompete them. Right. Like if you're really focused on one, two or three properties, and these are the places that like you're using as crash pads, and you're operating the side hustle and like really putting like good solid work into it, you're just going to beat other people doing it because they're idiots for the most part, or they have too many properties to handle. Like the bar is very low.
And yeah, just like you said, like, for example, I think one of the bigger companies that is managing a lot of properties is Vacasa, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
And from another investor who I was actually speaking with, he just removed his property and fired Vacasa because they didn't even give him like superhost status. His rating was like a 4.0. So I think giving it to these bigger companies, or even if you see a lot of Vacasa, like big companies managing Airbnbs in the area, it may still be a really good market for you to get in. Because these companies are so big that they're not even able to respond, like basically what Robbie just said.
Yeah.
They're too big to really like give that personalized experience like what people are looking for when they stay in an Airbnb?
Well, I know because I used to help run one of those companies. So eventually, as we grew and grew and grew, we brought in some capital. Our friend invested $1 million, and then we raised another $3 million. And we had a company called SendStay, and they were Vacasa was like our biggest competitor. And we were a vacation rental property manager, right? People gave us their properties. We onboarded them. We had a huge team of employees working. We burned through that $3 million super fast, hired too many people. I was, you know, I was like a co-founder, but not running operations. And then like, it was a huge nightmare running that company. The companies went out of business because of just, you know, too high of salary costs, mismanagement, dealing with other, so of course you're going to get a host. Some hosts are just like, take my property, I don't care. Other hosts are like, why'd you set the price at $45? It should be 43. And they're fucking annoying. And you got to deal with these people. It was a fucking nightmare running that sort of business. And I'm not recommending, you know, that. I'm not recommending you guys quit your job and become like a vacation, property rental vacation company. Now, if you grow that big and you want to do it and you're very good at running a big corporate thing like that, great. But what I'm really recommending this for is a side income, side hustle, or if you really hate your job, something that you kind of ease into and maybe replace it because it's awesome for lifestyle. It's the best sort of side business and way to create passive income and like a side real estate. Like let's even say you're making pretty good money, right? And you have some extra cash and you're like, well, should I invest in the stock market? Should I buy crypto? Should I do this? Should I do that? Whatever you do, you got to know, right? Like whatever you know the best, you're going to make the most money in as an investor because who wins as an investor? Someone, person with the most knowledge, right? But if you want something that has good returns, very safe, something you can easily figure out and know, and allows for, you know, you to have crash pads in different cities, different parts of the world, awesome for your dating life, there's no better thing than this. You know, like a lot of the guys in the group, you know, they got their Boston spot, they got their San Diego spot. When they're not at one of them, it's on Airbnb making money and they're not paying any rent because the whole thing's subsidized. You know, like when I'm in Kiev, my main spot, I'm living there, but when I'm gone, it's being rented out. Right. And that's paying for my hotel or my Airbnb in this other place. And if you're not doing that, if your fucking place is sitting there empty while you're on your week long trip to wherever, like, fuck you. You're an idiot. Like, put your shit in a closet, lock it up, and have someone pay a couple $100 a night to stay there. Like, why would you not do that? Right. Oh, I'm scared they're going to steal my stuff. No, there's insurance for that. Or, you know, put it at your parents' house, give it to your friend if you're so worried about it. Like, what fucking valuable shit? I don't want people sleeping on my bed. Just kill yourself. Like, get an extra pair of sheets, like put a mattress pad down. Like, who cares? Like, these are the silly reasons when clients be like, oh, I don't want shit. This is usually more like what kind of women say is like, I don't want, it's kind of icky having people like living in my place. Like, you get over that really fast. So
yeah. For sure. Well, I mean, like Robbie just said, the change is pretty immediate too. Because once you lock down a place, like not only are you making money pretty much immediately, like you also have somewhere cool to chill immediately. And like the benefits are pretty like right away.
It's a huge lifestyle bonus.
Yeah.
You know, like my favorite thing to do in Kiev before I was married, you know, I'd meet a chick and like I would take her on a date to like go check on my properties because I just wanted to look cool and show her all my places. I didn't really need to really check on them. I had, but you know, my my boots on the ground girl doing all that. But I'd be like, oh, I need to pick up the mail over here. I want to check something there. I just go from like this penthouse to this place. And so that was kind of like what was going on in the date. So of course the girls were like, wow, so this place is like a real estate tycoon. Right? So that's when we started the course. We got bnbtycoon.com. So this is kind of like a funny thing. Like, you know, I be your own BNB tycoon is kind of the idea. But like I said, more is a lifestyle business. And, you know, there's other courses out there that are like teaching people how to be like the next big real estate investor and build this whole thing. And that's not what we're striving to be. This is more of a lifestyle play. And if you want to make it bigger down the road, you know, that's why I think you're in a perfect case study because you know, you're doing exactly that, and you're using it to supplement your lifestyle.
Yeah, no. And even so, I asked my senior partners and like kind of kept them in the loop about like this whole journey of me getting into this. And they were impressed about like the returns on it. So
yeah. And these are like established real estate people, right?
These are guys who are like 60 years old. Like they've been doing real estate for like 30 plus years. And they're all impressed with like, you know, me being 26 and like just like putting some properties on Airbnb and still making like the returns that I am.
Yeah.
So it's huge for like,
and you're your own boss for that stuff. Like that's another beauty. I can't ever work for someone just because I'm a horrible employee. I hate taking orders. I'm a piece of shit. But I can work for myself. It's the only person I can work for. So it gives you that flexibility too. So if you guys are interested in learning more about this, I mean, obviously with what we've given you, like go and do it. You know, there's nothing stopping you. We're giving you the landlord pitch. There's nothing hard about this, but if you want us to hold your hand through the process, if you want to do this with a community of other people that are working on it, or if you just want to like cross your T's and dot your I's when you get into it, then, you know, train with us. Come do the course, go through the process, get a property, scale to two or three, and learn this avenue of investing. Really, you're learning another avenue of, you know, creating side income. And it can also be a job, like I said, or just a side hustle. And where can people go to get more info on it? So you've created, Nick is now helping me with it. We're doing the marketing together for it. And you can, if you think it might be a good fit, you're probably going to end up on a strategy session call with you.
Yeah. And you can find the video for some more information at bnbtycoon.com.
Cool. And there'll be a link. So BNB Tycoon, if you want to see if it's a good fit for you, kick the tires, jump on a call with Nick. He'll walk you through the process. And yeah. So, dude, thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it, Robbie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.